When I say we're pursuing brilliant balance, I mean, are we metaphorically strong in our core? Are we on our toes? Can we hit the mark, land the pose throughout the day at the places that matter so we get that deep sense of fulfillment? And that is very personally defined.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Former, empowering you to transform your life. One imperfect day at a time.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. Today, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Cheryl Ann Skolnicki. Cheryl Ann is the founder of the Brilliant Balance Company, a coaching program that equips women with the tools they need to break through the busyness and enjoy a thriving work-life balance. I don't know about you, but I definitely need that. A renowned speaker and podcast host, welcome Cheryl Ann.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's so fun to have you. When you first reached out and I was looking over your sheet, I remember having the thought, well, I need your services. If I need you, then surely a lot of my listeners could benefit from your expertise as well. But as always, I love to press rewind and talk a little bit about where you started, how you got to where you are today as this rock star work-life balance coach, really. I mean, it's incredible what you do. So share a little bit about the beginning, kind of where you started and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So I think the story probably starts best professionally, where when I graduated from college, I really thought I was going to go work in the Fortune 500 and climb that ladder and retire.
Were you a business major? Is that
I was a hospitality major. So I went to Cornell and I went to the hotel school. And the hotel school at Cornell is essentially a business degree with a services focus. And it was perfect for me because I love hospitality and travel and all those things, but it gave me a really strong business education. And then I went on and got an MBA later, but I sort of always knew I was going to be in that arena. And I thought I was going to work in the hospitality industry. Like, my internships were at resorts and such a great experience as a young person, but the lifestyle's not always great. And I think I knew, like, deep in my bones at that point, that I really wanted to have a family one day. And I didn't want to be in an operations heavy environment where, you didn't get the same days off every week or there was always a crisis. So I went to work for Procter & Gamble when I left college and worked in sales and then in marketing. And I stayed at P&G for 15 years. And there was a part of me that thought I could stay here forever until that itch to do something that was really my own became stronger.
The true heart of an entrepreneur, really.
I think it was in there all along. And yet, if you ask like my parents and my people who knew me, like, I would have fit very well into a corporate culture at a point in my life and did. But that notion to like make a mark, to do something that was my own, to have control over it became pretty strong. And that was, for me, coinciding with the years that I was having children. So I had my first two children while I was still at P&G. And then I left pregnant with my third and started my first business at that time.
So you had, how old were your children when you first started your business?
My first company. So they were 6, 3, and a newborn. I guess they were technically like 5, 2, and I was pregnant, right? But and then so that year I started my first company, which was in the health and wellness space. And I describe it, we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later, as like my starter business. Like, I was getting my feet wet with all of the levers of entrepreneurship, doing something I was really passionate about. I think I was clear it wasn't going to be the long-term play, but it was a great kind of first step. And I had that business for about 5 years while raising 3 very young children, and then made a decision to shut that business down and start a new one. And that kind of begins the story of the company I have today.
And did you see, because I've seen this in my entrepreneur journey, but did you see a correlation with that first business and see a need among the clients that you were serving? And you're like, okay.
Oh, yes.
Because that is quite literally what is happening over here. And talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that's such a fascinating you know, not everybody is an entrepreneur. And I always like to make clear, we have a lot of entrepreneurs that come onto the show, and not everybody is meant to go start their own business. Right. We need everyone. We need the people willing to work the 9-to-5 corporate jobs. And there's coaches just like you who will teach us how to thrive in those jobs. So this is not the end all be all, but I do think it's always fascinating to hear. It's so easy to see a successful entrepreneur from a distance and miss the mess, you know, miss the struggle that went into it and the uncertainty and the, I started one business and it stuck to the wall a little bit, but then I was like, I think I could come up with. Yeah. So just talk to me a little bit about what that time was like for you and the mindset. Were you nervous at all? Were you,
I was terrified. Yeah. I think a lot of women really are very well served to start businesses where they're teaching from their life experience.
Yes.
You know, I think it's a really good model. And I think a lot of us do it. I've done it twice, where you sort of get through something, some chapter of life, and then pick your head up and go, you know, I learned some things there that might be valuable to other people who seem to still be struggling with that. You know, you're sort of teaching your former self. So my first business was very much in that space. And I was working with women who were trying to reconcile their relationship with food. And that could be their own, like they didn't feel like they were eating very well or didn't know how to, or there was a lot of like disordered patterns in the way they were eating. And they wanted, like, I would say my client at that time wanted a sense of peace and confidence with food that was like, she was feeling good in her body with what she was eating. And sometimes it was about feeding their family well. Like, I know what to do, but I can't get anybody else to eat this way. So that business was called Nourish, and it was, the tagline was feed your well-being. And it was really, I loved what I was doing. However, this is where you had this insight in those conversations, which included some coaching elements. What I learned was it's never about the food. Right? The relationship with food is always just a manifestation of some other thing that hasn't been sorted out in life. And it's like where it chose to glom onto. And that was definitely part of my story. And I knew if it was part of my story, and I was hearing it over and over again with these women, that there was a bigger sort of change that I could help them make. And if you think about all the reasons we turn to food, right? It's overwhelm or loneliness or whatever, right? And those were the issues that I was more interested in helping with. So that audience of women who were time starved, but, you know, really ambitious, who were essentially pursuing the most important years of their professional lives while also the most important years of their personal lives, arguably, right? Yeah. Raising children became, I knew that was the audience I wanted to serve. And so I'd worked with enough of them over those 5 years to learn what were really the challenges. And that became the sort of springboard to Brilliant Balance, which is designed to help those women like achieve their biggest aspirations while they are taking care of raising a family at the same time. And, you know, as you well know, it's pretty easy to get lost in the middle of that if you're not
very easy.
Really mindful.
It is almost impossible without some guidance and accountability.
Yeah. And intentionality. Like, I think the thing that we can buy into is, well, it is what it is. And the cultural narrative right now is it is what it is. And so just settle in for the ride, just get through from, you know, coffee time to wine time and be a mess. And it's, we're all in it together. And I think there are some elements of that that are very comforting and reassuring in that, you know, we certainly do not all have it figured out. Most definitely, I do not. Just ask my family, right?
Right.
But there are things we can do to feel a whole lot better, sort of no matter what we're navigating. And that's what I'm super passionate about sharing.
Hey parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's this dichotomy between authenticity, but then also complacency. It's like navigating that very, very careful tension between the two, where you certainly want to be authentic, know where your worth really is, your true value, but also recognize that that's not an excuse then for complacency, whatever that may be.
Yeah, you know what I think about a lot is the serenity prayer. And it really is that knowing the difference, right? Between what am I going to have to accept because this is not changeable. I have to honor my humanness. I have to honor my reality. But then also changing the things I can, because there are some things that we can re-engineer. And if we're pretty intentional about that, and just kind of, I usually say, like, if we just double click on the problem and really think about, is there a better way to do this? Often there is. And that's sometimes where the magic happens, is we learn, like, oh, if I wouldn't have even looked at that, I would have just tolerated it for a really long time.
Yeah. It's being willing to do the hard things, to take all that, the hard self look and evaluation and say, okay. And that is really difficult, especially when you're busy, because you don't have time. You don't have time to do the self-reflection and the self-evaluation, especially as a mom when you're juggling all of
the things. Put your head down and do the things, right? Not, you don't think about how you're doing that. You just do that. Yeah.
Right. A couple blood pressure medications later and cholesterol, and then finally you get to that boiling point, or maybe it's a mental health issue. And yeah, so it's trying to get ahead of that so that we're not even getting to that point, which is Cheryl Ann is here. Another question I like to ask, because we're obviously all about embracing imperfection here. In your years of launching these two businesses, can you think of a time, or maybe even it's just as a parent, and speaking of work-life balance, where you made a significant mistake, but it was a launching pad to a lesson learned or transformation that you saw in your life?
Sure. I mean, there are hundreds of examples, right? For like all
same.
Of
let
us.
Me count the ways. How much
I know. I think I am. Look, if you would have asked 20-year-old me or 25-year-old me to answer that question, I think I would have really struggled to admit. Mm. You know, to frame it as like, that's something that I did wrong, or it was a failure. And I think there's just, I just have a very different relationship with that whole word at this point in my life. Like, I look back at things that failed as like, well, what was in that for me? What was the lesson there that I carried forward? And what came out of the pain, and who did I grow closer to? And it sounds so dorky, but it's true. Like, yeah. That changes everything, because you stop being sort of in a cascade of shame and really start looking at it as like eyes forward, you know, like I'm still here. So what am I doing about it? One of the ones that stands out to me professionally, and I tell this to every business owner I know, but I also think it would be true in a family. I think it would be true in a corporate environment. When I was in that second business. So I had shut down the first business, and I was in like pre-launch almost for the next one. I really thought I knew what people wanted. I thought, from having talked to everyone for 5 years in the first business, that I knew what it was. So I kind of went into like the secret workshop and started building an offering, which was at the time going to be a membership site. And I was so excited about the content, and like, we're just building away. You know, we invested in a platform. I had two women on my team part-time who played really important roles in helping build that. And we were so excited and so proud of it. And we launched it, and it wasn't quite crickets, but close. You know, like, we had a handful of people who said, yeah, this seems good, but we were really missing like the core value proposition. And when I look back on that, I'm like, the idea that I would have gone through all of that work and all of that investment and all of that time to launch something that I didn't know if anybody wanted, it was like my perfectionism on overdrive, right? I couldn't let anybody see it until it was perfect, and in my mind, and yet it didn't have market value. The lesson in that was then, you know, maybe 6 months later, and I will admit I needed outside guidance to figure this out. Mm. We took an entirely different approach. And I essentially said, hey, I'm thinking about building this thing. Would you want it? Let's have a conversation about it. Talked to a handful of people. Like, I think there were 7 who said, yeah, I think I would want that. Had them buy it, and then literally built it, you know, just to have
around what they wanted.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is straight out of Silicon Valley startup culture, but I think that a lot of us who come out of corporate environments and try to start something for the first time are trying so hard to perfect it that we miss really talking to our market about how can I be of service? What do you really need and want? And so I just try to repeat that over and over again with my family. Like, have you ever done, bought the perfect holiday gift and you're like, here it is. And they're like, yeah, I don't want that. You know, because you didn't ask. So I think it just plays out in so many ways.
I think that's a brilliant example. I mean, I even think there's times where I've asked, not my youngest child, Lord only knows what her answer would be, but like my older two, and I'll say, what could I do better as a mom? What do you wish? I mean, some of it is like, I wish you'd buy more candy.
Okay, sure.
Well, about that.
It's good to watch.
But right, exactly. Keep dreaming. Christmas time. But, you know, it is. It's that concept of having that open conversation. And I think if nothing else, there's this huge advantage to placing yourself in a position of humility. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what it comes down to, is it's this willingness to say, I don't know it all, and I'm willing to partner with you to ultimately create something that is going to be of value, whether that be as a mom or a friend or a business owner. I mean, the list, to your point, goes on and on and on. I think that's a brilliant example. It's servant leadership, really, is what it is.
You know, there's so much in at least the entrepreneurial space about being of service, right? Air quotes, being of service. And I think we talk about it in corporate environments as servant leaders and families, like, how can I be of service to my family? But if you really internalize what that means it has to matter to them. Like, exactly. You have to offer your gifts, your talents, your capabilities, but it has to meet a need. And if there's this gap, like, here I am, I'm offering, but they don't need it. It kind of falls on deaf ears. And I think we're frustrated and resentful as the offerer. And so are they, because their needs aren't getting met, right? So you're absolutely right. Kids will tell you, spouses will tell you, if we're patient enough to ask.
Yeah. And willing enough to humble yourself and hear the
the answer.
Yeah. No, but I thought you needed this. And they're like, no, I need this. It is. It's so hard. It's so hard to do. If you could sum up the secret to success, whether it be success at home, success in the work environment, success, whatever that means for anybody listening and in your own life, if you could sum it up in one word, what would it be?
Fulfillment. And that's just the first word that came to me when you said it. And I'm like, okay, don't overthink this. Don't overthink.
Oh, that's fulfillment. Perfect. Yeah.
And can I expand on why?
Please. Yes.
Because when I hear the word success, there's an externalization of it. Like, it's almost like we're letting other people judge, are we successful? Or we're looking at them and saying, well, they appear to be successful. But fulfillment is very internal. You know, how would you know if that person who, by all cultural markers, has achieved success, how do you know how it feels on the inside? And I think that's really what I'm chasing. That's what I'm trying to get the women in our coaching community to chase, is like that deep internal knowing of, is this working for me? Right. And nobody else gets to decide that. So, you know, you think about the traditional markers of success, whether it's money or prestige or impact or power. And we're not going to argue about whether those are true. Like, they just are. Culturally, that is the definition. But it doesn't mean it would feel good to us to have, and it might mean it would feel great, right? So fulfillment to me is where you get that intersection of, how does it feel? Does it feel right for you right now? That's what I'm chasing.
I think it's a perfect word for it. And it's the first time it's been said. And I think there's countless interviews with people in Hollywood who will say that very, very thing. And again, talking about the cultural definition of success, you know, you see this big name, they've made a lot of money, they have a significant impact and influence. And then they get on this interview a couple years later and they share how miserable they were and how they were missing their own sense of fulfillment because they got lost in the noise and the success and the fame. And at the end of the day, to your point, they didn't actually feel fulfilled. Therefore, were they truly successful? Maybe in the world's eyes, but not in their own.
Yeah. And I think if we're not checking in regularly, like if we don't have a practice to check in and say, how do I feel?
Yeah.
Right. How is this going for me this week, this day, you know, this season of life? Like, is this working? Like, cause I'm telling you, you can drive up and down any street and be like, boy, look at all the success. And yet you're not in that home knowing, like, what's the conversation at the dinner table? Right. And I think that's really dangerous.
And social media is not a good indication, people.
No.
We have to remind ourselves this, though, because the social influence, whether it's social media, whether it is a magazine that you pick up, even within our churches, there is so much societal influence as to what ultimately defines happiness and health. And we let that influence us, and we don't even realize half the time we're influenced by it.
And I don't don't know how you feel about this, so I'd love to hear, but I don't think it ever will. I think we can keep saying be more authentic on social media and, you know, the tools are trying to get us there, but there is privacy. Like there are some mm-hmm. things that are just not, they're not for sharing with a broad audience of people who are often strangers in our social media arena, right? So where we get that level of support and encouragement and love essentially has to come from our real world connections that are in close and who we trust with those stories and those struggles. Because I don't think we're ever going to see it from the community at large, nor really should we. You know, there's like, there's a level, but I don't think we're ever going to really get into the depth at that with that world.
Yeah. And I think it's the idea of balancing. I mean, it's a platform. It's a beautiful platform to be able to reach people. It can be beautiful, I should say, and an opportunity to reach people with your message in a much broader sweep than you may have been able to once upon a time. But I totally agree with you. I think there is a balance between authenticity and then oversharing and losing that sense of privacy. So yeah, it is, where's that balance? I mean, I'm always trying to be in that space where I am authentic and that my marriage is not perfect. Like my kids scream, they yell, but that doesn't mean I have to show my kids screaming and yelling on Instagram. But I think it's still important to convey that sense that, listen, we're real life over here.
You know, right. Life is messy and complicated, and that's beautiful and real, but it's not all going to be for public consumption.
Correct.
Because I'm busy living it.
Exactly.
Not photographing it.
Busy living over here. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think the reminder too, I mean, for myself, I didn't have any social media before I started this blogging virtual business world. And, you know, I quickly discovered this whole other universe quite literally, and it was very disturbing in many ways. But what has been really neat is that the relationships that I have formed are real, but they're suboptimal.
Mm.
And it's that concept that I am still affecting real people. What I put, because sometimes we forget that. We forget that what we're putting in the virtual space is being seen and consumed by real people. And in one sense, we're constantly chasing after the numbers and we forget that the people who are already there and bought in are truly consuming what we're putting out there. But then on the flip side, it's still a suboptimal relationship. And so the goal is still to be building that community with real life people. And then the moments that you do get to meet those followers and they become those real life people is really, that's a beautiful moment too that I thoroughly enjoyed. Yes. But I love that point that you made. I think it's important for all of us to keep in mind that social network is suboptimal in relationship as real as it is. So make sure you have your people close in hand, everyone. Social media is not enough. We are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, stay tuned. We're going to play a speed round of this or that with Cheryl Ann, get to know her a little bit better. And we are going to hear her expert advice on breaking through the busyness to enjoy a balanced work life right when we get back from this break.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual-certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
We are back with Cheryl Ann. All right, Cheryl Ann, we're going to play a quick speed round of this or that. Two options, no stress. First thing that comes to mind, burger or hot dog?
Burger.
Favorite burger you've ever had?
In my backyard.
Ooh, that's a great answer. It's funny. I've never actually thought about my own answer to that question. That's a good one. Candy or baked goods?
Baked goods.
What's your favorite baked good?
My mom's chocolate chip cookies.
Ooh, what's her secret? Do you know?
I do know, but I can't share.
I guess then it wouldn't be a secret, Anna. Exactly. Okay, my secret, by the way, is vanilla pudding. The ones that I make have instant vanilla pudding in. They're so, so good. Now I'm hungry. All right. Would you rather go to a movie theater or a concert hall?
Concert hall.
Do you have a favorite concert that you've ever been to?
Yes. So, but I was thinking more like orchestra concert when I said this.
Sure.
However,
absolutely.
Favorite concert I've ever been to would have been U2, which I went to with my husband right after we had our first daughter.
Yeah. Have you been to a concert hall? Can you think of like of an orchestra?
So music hall in, I live in Cincinnati, and music hall in Cincinnati is like an absolutely gorgeous historic building. And every single time we've been there for anything, I feel like it's like a trip back in time to like another world.
Love
I love it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm actually super weird. I don't love concerts, but I love like orchestral type concerts. I would rather go to a major orchestra performance than I would.
I know what to do with myself there. I don't know what to do with myself at a big rock concert.
And like all the screaming people with hands in the air and they're throwing things. I'm literally weirded out by it. I'm like, oh my gosh,
I feel very, I know what to do if I'm in a seat and everyone's behaving. Yeah.
Such a great point. Would you rather cook or decorate?
Cook.
Okay. Well, let's switch. You come to my house and cook. I'll decorate for you. What's your favorite thing to cook? Do you have a very favorite thing that you look forward to? Do you have a repeat meal?
I love to cook so much. I could
good
never pick one thing. It is
wonderful.
Is truly like my deepest passion. So I mean,
love
give
that.
Me anything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny because I'm a fitness nutrition coach and I have these regular meal plans, but I enjoy creating a recipe. I don't enjoy just making dinner every day. I wish I did.
I do. I would say
a lot of women do.
Like,
I think that's wonderful.
My style is probably like Ina Garten, Barefoot Contessa, but with a healthy twist. Like I can sort of, but that farm fresh, like abundant rough chop. That's my jam.
I love that. Yeah. I have dreams of a massive garden. Maybe I would enjoy cooking more if I like felt that sense of satisfaction that I grew this food.
I don't know. Gardens are a lot of work.
They are a lot of work. Yeah. That's why I had children for chores and to take care of the garden one day. Okay. Would you rather go to New York or Paris?
Paris.
How about London or Paris?
Paris.
Paris. Yeah.
But I do love both. We took our family to London, Paris, and Rome right before the pandemic.
Oh, fun. Wait, how old are your children now?
What My children now are 17, 15, and 12.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So this was 3 years ago. They were 9, 12, and 14 when we did that trip. And we called it the highlights tour because I just was like, we're only going to see the big stuff in these three cities. And then we can go back to whatever, kind of caught their interest. But London and Paris, very different vibe. And I like them both for different reasons.
Yeah. I definitely want to get back to Europe. I actually grew up in Scotland, but it's like vague memories, not the memory of an adult. So I would love to.
It's different.
Yes. I would love to go back. Well, we're going to chat about breaking through the busyness. This is ultimately what you have built this very successful coaching business around. And one of the things that I think needs to be talked about first before we can even define and explain the tools to break through that sense of busyness, to enjoy a balanced work life. Talk to me about what you have seen in this sense of addiction to busyness, because I am right there. I love being busy. I thrive when I'm busy. You take away a schedule and to-do list and I'm like, I like become a vegetable. You know what I mean? Like I have to have that sense of I'm
on
being productive.
Off, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that can easily become too much. And so just talk to me about this concept of our society's addiction to busyness, and especially the challenge as women, and how you've seen that, how you've seen it hurting us.
I mean, this thing has tentacles, right? So when I said earlier, you have to sort of double click on whatever problem is really in the way. A lot of women would say, my problem is I have too much to do and not enough time to do it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they want to come at the solution from how do I become more productive? How do I get more done? How do I fit more in to the time that I have? Right. And there's a deep awareness that most of us have more to do than we really have time to do it. When I say it has tentacles, there really are a number of different things underneath that are driving that dynamic. One of them is we are absolutely terrible at making choices, like terrible. Mm. We don't have a process for making choices. We don't define things as choices that actually are, right? We look at them as it's not a choice, but it is a choice. We don't see the long-term
ramifications. Give me an example of that. Give me an example of it that you see.
So someone might say, I have to drive my children 25 minutes each way to school. Like I have to drive them to school and come home and I have to go pick them up and come home every day. And this is taking like 2 hours out of every day. But it is a choice, right? It's a choice to be the person driving. It's a choice that they're in that school. It's a choice that you do the drive every day. Like there are choices underneath that once you've decided they're in this school and I'm their driver, then you're right. It is what it is. But like, if you kind of go back a half step, there are lots of ways to. Does that make sense? Or we can't have dinner as a family because the kids have practices in 5 different directions, you know? Okay. Well, the choice is, are they enrolled in that activity? That's a choice. Right. And so I can be a little hardcore about that because I really believe everything is a choice. There are like so few things you don't have a choice about.
Absolutely.
And part of that, one of the tentacles is that we assign rules to the roles that we have in life. Like, well, I'm the mom, so I'm supposed to be the one who puts dinner on the table or who drives them to practice or who tucks them in at night or who whatever. Some moms, for any of those 3 things I just named, it's their favorite time of day. They love it. Like, put me in the car, let me drive, right? Or let me make that meal, like I said before about myself, or I want to do the tuck-in. Other moms are like, I would choose to do that differently, but I don't feel like I can. So one of the things driving this kind of narrative of busy is the job of motherhood especially has been laden with like so many rules about how you do it. And it honestly just keeps getting worse. Like we just keep piling on more expectations around what it means to be a air quotes good mom, right? In this era of history. So that's another thing. And then I think competitiveness, like we are inherently competitive. And so if you see someone else, and again, you're capturing her highlight reel, you see one mom at drop off or pickup and her hair's done, she's got a great bag and she looks pulled together. And you're like, well, she looks like that 100% of the time.
She's got a great bag. I love that you pointed that out. I never noticed bags, but that's my problem. I notice shoes.
Right. You're not. And those snippets and snapshots become, well, that must be what her every moment of every day is.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And you just don't know. Right. So that competitive comparing of when I said earlier, we're not in other people's homes, knowing what it feels like. For an example, in my household, my mom and dad are very involved in just helping manage things. They live 20 minutes away. They moved here when my oldest daughter was a baby. And they're very involved in driving. So that buys me time every day, right? Because when I'm setting up my carpool driving schedule, I'm able to plug them in for shifts of driving people. And I take mine, but I'm not like in this, I'm drowning and I have no help and support. Right. So that might give me time to brush my hair before I go, whereas somebody else really doesn't. I think that competitive nature is a big piece of the busy narrative, is like we're trying to do it all. And then another one is we're terrible at asking for help. You know, so we're terrible at making choices, right? We're terribly competitive and we are terrible about accepting or asking for help. So how many times has this happened to you? This makes me crazy. Even if someone offers, like, hey, I'll get your kid. The person's like, no, 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 I'll get them. Why are we doing this? Why are we rejecting proactive offers of help? Right. And I think I'm very focused on driving and carpools because school just started for my children like in the last week. And
it's a great example, though.
Explosion, right, of driving. Mm-hmm. But it could be anything. It's like we get those offers of help and we just reject them out of some sort of misguided pride. Like if we don't do it all with our bare hands, it doesn't count. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, it's a tentacled thing. Like they're all in the mix of how we end up in this world of like, we're just really busy and kind of proud of it.
Yeah. I mean, what you touched on. I just did an interview. This is something that spans, I think, humanity. I mean, men and women inherently struggle with things a little differently, but the need to do things ourselves, sort of that all or nothing mentality, is so destructive. And really what it comes down to is the idea of delegation. Mm-hmm. It's being able to delegate. And we just had this whole Zach Bauermaster, for anyone who's interested, he's a principal who talked about humble leadership, how that is the secret to thriving as a leader is humility. But the thing that we talked about was this idea of delegation. And it's interesting from a man's perspective, because the struggle is real for both of us, but for women, it looks a little different, because you said you made a great point, the pressures of motherhood. So we add these little mini humans in our lives to those pressures, and that busyness expands tenfold, especially if you're also balancing a work life.
Yes.
So you're now having this pressure of doing everything, not just at work, but also this mentality as a mom. And I'll just throw this in here for anybody who is hearing me for the first time, who is a friend of Cheryl Ann's. My listeners have heard me say this a million times, but delegate to accelerate. Literally, whatever it is that you want to see happen in life, you want to accelerate to get there, whether it be better mental health, less anxiety, more productivity, you have to learn to be able to delegate. And I'll just throw this in here really quick, that the bottom line is, it is actually hurting other people to not delegate. Not only are you hurting yourself, but delegation is empowering somebody else to do what they do well, possibly even better than you. And why not let them thrive in something that they're really good at doing, to allow you to do what you love to do and ultimately fills you with life?
Just talked to a business owner, a client, about this yesterday of mine. Yeah. And what I was saying to her is, you have to change your scoreboard. Like, you think you get points for doing it and you're being helpful and a servant leader. You get points now for not doing it. Like, anytime you don't do it, you get mental points. Because I think we all have some kind of currency, and we kind of got addicted, like in school and then in early in our careers. Like, the more we did, the more points we got. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, you got to change what's a point. A point now is not doing it and offloading it to someone else to do. And, you know, I think that's where you come face to face with control. We don't like to give up control. And I think that's another piece that's under this busyness, is we just don't think anyone can do it as well as we do.
Well, and that's what, you know, that's what I found in my own life. When I was a great example is when I was a nurse practitioner in the ER, and I helped start up these two stroke programs for two different local hospitals. And the whole process that we configured that ultimately ended up being so successful was, we empowered the nursing staff to make independent decisions of us as providers, because it gave us more time to see other patients. And until it was absolutely essential that we needed to be there, we empowered them to pretty much do the entire process independent of us. And there were so many ways that that ended up being a very successful program. But that's true of so many areas in our life, is if you want to be able to do more of the things that you love to do, then delegating also includes equipping someone else with the tools. If you know that this is done really well this way, then teach them how to do it. Teach them how to do it so that it can be done well. So it's sort of that balance of, yes, you're giving it up to somebody else, but you're also equipping them with the tools that you know will lead to success.
Right. And that's leverage time, right? Because once you've taught them how to do it, you don't just get the time back, but once you get it back over and over.
Ongoing.
And over. Yeah.
Yep. It compounds itself. Absolutely. And time you can't get back. There is no way to get a return on your time. When it's gone, it's gone. You have mentioned, certainly, we've touched on a lot of different points here, the struggles, the pain points of busyness, how we see that ultimately negatively impacting our lives. What are the strategies then, conversely, that you empower women to employ in order to try to break through that and enjoy more balance in life? Delegation clearly is one that we've touched on, but share with me some strategies that women who ultimately are getting more done, what kinds of strategies are they actually employing?
Yeah. I want to be really specific about this, and I'm going to kind of take you up a three-step ladder.
Yeah.
So when I think about balance, I'm not thinking about a static construct. So I think the first thing we have to make sure that the listener is kind of on the same page, that balance to me is a dynamic construct, meaning mm-hmm. I picture like Misty Copeland dancing in the American Ballet. And if you picture Misty Copeland or Google her, if you don't know her, you get this like just icon of strength and grace, right? And power, but she is moving. But there's balance, right? She has to be upright. She has to have a strong core. There's like this sense of knowing like where she is in space. That's my metaphor for balance versus like a pie chart, right? Or scales that we're trying to balance, because those outdated metaphors imply that balance is something we can sort of arrange like a puzzle and then walk right. away from, and it'll stay that way. And I don't know about your household, but my household doesn't stay anyway. Like it changes every day.
Child, just stay there and don't move.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, they're sleeping through the night, then they're not sleeping through the night. They're thriving in school, then they don't have any friends. Like it, right. Just like constant change. And then not to mention all the changes at work. So I want to get really anchored into like, when I say we're pursuing brilliant balance, I mean, are we strong in our core? Not literally, okay, like metaphorically strong in our core. Are we on our toes? Can we kind of hit the mark, land the pose throughout the day at the places that matter so we get that deep sense of fulfillment? So we are chasing fulfillment ultimately. And that is very personally defined. So I think this works like a progression. If you're assessing like, why do I not feel that way today? And someone listening will be like, I do not feel fulfilled today. Mm-hmm. I start at the bottom and I say like, do you have enough energy to move through your day feeling good? So I think of this one as power. This is the first of three P's. Power is like, what am I doing to power my day? Am I getting enough sleep? Am I eating well? Am I moving my body? Do I have a collection of practices that I do with regularity that allow me to feel like the best me? And if you look at women who are thriving and you ask them, do you have a collection of practices that you do with regularity? Their answer will be yes, if they think for a minute, right? So for me, sleep is paramount. I do not negotiate about sleep. If I don't get sleep, I make it up. Like it is, I do not function without enough sleep. I don't even try, right? My emotions are raw. My thinking is not clear. Sleep is like just mission critical. Food and movement matter a ton. Time alone matters to me. You know, time to let my brain learn something and be creative is really important for me. But it could be tennis. It could be time with a sibling. It could be time outside. Like we all know the things that really make us feel like a healthy, whole human. So that's the first P is power. Once you kind of know how to construct a day so that you're feeling powered up, then you get to sort of survive in advance, right? So the next P is productivity. And this is where we think about how do you make use of your time? So if the first one is making use of your energy, this is making use of your time. And so here I think about upcycling time. Like what is the lowest use that you're like, I'm kind of wasting this time. And then how can I repurpose it to something that's actually advancing me in the direction I want to move my life? So how do you do that? I think about this like an SOS method, right? You're going to either stop doing something, you're going to offload it to someone else. You were talking about delegating, right? You could also pay someone, like outsource mm-hmm. it, or you're going to simplify it. So the same task takes less time. That's it. There's not another
way. Say that again, the SOS. I love that.
Yeah. So it's stop doing it. Mm-hmm. Offload it or simplify it.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And those three things, if you are looking at your time and saying, all right, I got to get time available for the things that are going to make me feel more fulfilled, things that are going to make me feel more like I'm on my A game, then you have to stop doing the things or do them in less time that are kind of draining you, right? Like you have to quote unquote do them, but they're draining. So we talk a lot about productivity through that lens. Productive means I had an intention for my week, I knew what I meant to do, and then I was in integrity to my plan. I did it, right? If you don't have a plan and you do a bunch of stuff, you don't feel very good because you're like, I don't even know if I did the right stuff. So that combination of intention and integrity kind of sits in the middle of that productivity cycle. If you have a powerful day and you're feeling energized and you have a productive week and you've gotten the things done that you meant to do, then you sort of start being able to have some headspace to think about questions of possibilities and purpose, right? What would I want to do next? What do I want to learn? Who do I want to be? What do I want to go do in the world, right? What experiences do I want to have? And those, honestly, those are the things we are sitting around dreaming about, mm-hmm. like, and often saying, but I can't do it because I don't have any time, right? I can't write the book. I can't start the business. I can't launch the thing. I can't redo the kitchen. I can't whatever, because there's all these constraints on my life that I can't figure out how to sort through. So when we get our days kind of in rhythm and we bring our weeks into rhythm, we really do start to get the headspace to explore those possibilities. And that's what brings us in alignment with really our own path that makes us feel the most fulfilled. So that's, you know, when you think about strategies, we want to skip over what we think is like, this is too easy. Oh my God, are we really going to talk about sleep again? Yes, we're going to talk about sleep again because
well, it's anyone critical. Who's listened to me knows sleep is, yes, I mean, absolutely. Sleep is essential. Sleep is the body's holistic reset button.
Yes. And I bet I'm telling you, we're still not doing it. By and large, if you look at the data, like you and I have gotten the memo, but our society has not gotten the memo yet. So that is
I did a podcast on that. If anyone wants 13 tips to sleep better at night, scientifically proven strategies, check it out. It is perfect. Essential. Every element of your health will improve all of it.
And, you know, and I think that's the realm you've done a ton of work in, right? Is like when I am a healthy, whole functioning human, then I can actually think straight. And I would say that second P for us is really all about executive function. Like it's planning and organizing and optimizing so that things are smoother. So there's a rhythm and a cadence to the week. And you're not just like flying around with your pants on fire, which is unfortunately how a lot of us, there's like a frantic energy to how we're moving through the week. And the most exciting stuff to me, because it's really what people say when they want balance, is I want more time to do what I want to do and less time doing what I feel like I have to do. Mm-hmm. You know, anyone who says my work-life balance is terrible is really saying the things that I feel like I am being handed and I have to do it and I don't really like it, I'm accepting those and I'm doing those and they're just eating up too much of my time and energy and I'm frustrated. Right? Or I'm resentful because I'm not getting to do these things that my like heart and soul are yearning to do. And that's the balance that we want to reconcile inside of the work that I do with our clients.
I love that. Tell me some of the tools. Something that I have seen on your website, I've seen you talk about, is something called calendar control. And we're going to actually have a freebie that Charlene has generously shared for anybody who wants to sign up for it. But tell me a little bit about this concept of calendar control.
Sure. I mean, if I had to boil it down to probably the biggest aha that people get from that training, it's the integration of your calendar with your to-do list. So most people are living in a two-system paradigm. Like I have a calendar and that's for my appointments and I have a to-do list or maybe 27 to-do lists, right? Kind of scattered around the house on post-it notes and yellow pads and envelopes.
Amen. I have so many sticky notes and so many different
places. Right. Do this. Don't forget this. And I think at the core of calendar control is you and I ultimately are one human being moving through a chronological day, doing one thing at a time. So whether or not we have noted that we like took a shower this morning on our calendar, we did. And it took some of our time, right? We went downstairs and made a cup of coffee and that took some time. Now, I'm not suggesting that you write that stuff on your calendar, but the reality is we're moving through a chronological day, right. One moment at a time. And when we acknowledge that, we start to see the integration between tasks we're doing for work, tasks we're doing as a parent or as a human, right? And they're just kind of blending into this sequence of time. What we often don't do proactively is say, I have a lot of stuff I want to get done. It's not time stamped, like it's not an appointment on my calendar. We don't schedule it, right? We don't say like, oh, that task of, you know, it could be anything from like drafting the notes for your next podcast to getting your will organized with an attorney, right? Mm-hmm. Those tasks live off in like sort of never land and they don't make it into the calendar. So something my listeners will have heard me say a ton is what gets scheduled gets done. And so the calendar control system is about having a running to-do list in one place, kind of that master list, and then having a process for integrating elements of that into your calendar a week at a time so that those things actually get done and your to-do list gets smaller instead of longer.
Oh, I think it's a beautiful concept too, because then you're not overwhelming your day. It's reconciling, like you said, the to-do list with the calendar and gradually incorporating it in as opposed to cramming everything in to a
It's
day.
A way to visualize how much time things will take. And I think you quickly confront a skill gap. Like some people are not good at estimating. Yes. So they'll say, oh, that's a 20-minute task and then it takes 2 hours. And a few weeks into this process, you learn like where was your skill gap that probably was underneath some of your overwhelm. Mm-hmm. And then it can kind of start to resolve.
Well, I think it's a beautiful practical tool as well to also learn how to triage your time. So you're also starting to visually see in that chronological day, okay, this is a task. It's on my to-do list, but it must get done in this chronological order.
Yes.
This, on the other hand, does not have an expiration date, but it still should get done at some point. So I think that's it's
like
great
you're reconciling urgent, important, right? Like the Stephen Covey model. And the problem, of course, is the non-urgent never gets done. So this is a way to kind of
scheduled
create some space for those. Yeah.
I love that. So tell me about the freebie that you are offering. The link is going to be in the show notes. If you're watching on YouTube, you can click right down here. It will be there. And you can also find it on the show notes blog post at hammersandhugs.com. But what will people get when they sign up for this content?
So a training and how to do the system. So, you know, it's kind of step by step. How exactly do you put that system in place so that you can get the benefits from it right away? Like it's pretty simple to execute once it's laid out for you and we lay it out in that training.
I love it. So if you want the calendar control, click on it. You're basically going to learn how to turn your to-do list into a done list. That makes me happy just even saying it. I love checking stuff off. I love those check boxes. Cheryl Ann, it was an honor to have you on the podcast. I pray God's richest blessing over your heart, your home, your kids, your business, your changing lives. And I'm grateful that you're here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.